Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Health Sciences Committee. We're going to start. We're going to have Winter, if you'd be so kind to take the roll, please.
She's working on her mic.
Thanks. Check, check.
Apologies, Mr. Chair. I'll take the roll now. Chair Dubrava? Vice Chair Tarkanian?
Here. Present.
Regent Del Carlo?
I'm here.
Regent McAdoo?
Here.
Regent McMichael?
Here.
Regent Moran?
Morning, Winter.
Good morning. You have a quorum present.
Thank you. We'll go to item number one, public comment. Is there any public comment in Reno?
There is none in Reno.
Thank you. Is there any public comment here in Las Vegas? Seeing none. Any public comment in Elko?
No public comment in Elko.
Thank you. We'll go to item number two, the minutes. Do I have a motion, please?
I so move. This is Kathy McAdoo.
Thank you. I have a motion from Regent McMichael, and I'll take that as a second from Chair McAdoo. Any discussion? All in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
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 Motion carries. Thank you. We'll come back to Chair's report. We're going to go to item number four, UNLV Kirkcaldy School of Medicine report. Dean Kahn, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could have my first slide, please. While we're working on the technical issues of my first slide, let me start out with some announcements. So we plan to occupy our new medical education building by the end of October next month, actually. We're in fact starting the domino effect of moves that will facilitate that move. We've been working, as we've talked about before, on an academic health initiative throughout UNLV and its health science components. We've identified four priorities, and we're working on SMART goals for each of these, and we're working on implementation. And they include the ability to provide accessible evidence-based care, the ability to practice interprofessional education across the health science schools, the ability to do interdisciplinary research, and the construction of a single practice plan for all of the health components of the university. I'd like to announce some leadership changes. Dr. Robert Hernandez, who was formerly the Associate Dean for Admissions and Student Affairs, is now the new Vice Dean for Academic Affairs and Education, with the departure of the previous holder, who went on to pursue a fellowship in pathology. Additionally, Dr. Dale Netsky is the new chair of our Department of Medical Education. There are the slides. If we can go one more. Awesome. Our philanthropic gifts have more than doubled since the last academic year, totaling well over $7.5 million, and I have a graphic representation of that on the next slide. And finally, we're really in earnest planning a new ambulatory surgery building with support from our city and with recent $40 million support from the state. So if I could have the next slide. The next slide is a graphic representation of our philanthropic gifts, starting with 2020 and most recently in 2022. So my development team has done a good job in garnishing garnering, excuse me, support from the community in raising important money for our school. If I could have the next slide, I'm going to talk about our research growth as well. Recognizing that we're a new school, I'm happy to report that our awarded research funds total over $8 million. And most recently, we've had nearly $200 million submitted through ARPA funding. Now, we're not going to get all that money, but I'm very happy that our faculty have been engaged in writing grants and proposals to fund the projects necessary for our community. If I can have the next slide. Academic Affairs had a freshman orientation in July. Today, they have a parent and partners event and a welcome ceremony. The next slide really shows some of the progress in our school from a standardized testing perspective. Step one is an exam that medical students across the country take during their second year. And step two is an exam that they typically take during their fourth year. And I'm happy to report both our passing percentages as well as our mean scores are higher than national averages. Now, let me remind you that our incoming MCATs are not higher than national average, and we take a fair number of first-generation college students, et cetera. So I'm really proud of the people that work in academic affairs for taking people with the desire and motivation to become doctors and to academically prepare them so that they're successful. If I can have the next slide, the match is where residents find out, where fourth-year medical students find out where they're going to be. We had 56 students participating in the match this year. One elected to take an extra year to get an MBA, the others matched. And in the next slide, you can see where people have matched. It's in what specialties. It's really a gamut of specialties. And the next slide actually lists that we had 53% of our graduating class match in a primary care specialty defined as family medicine, internal medicine, OB-GYN, and pediatrics. So that's a very good number. If I can have the next slide, I think we're two behind now, one after that. There we go. This year for admissions, we had over 1,500 applicants. We interviewed just under 300 students. We matriculated 60 students. There are 35 women in the class and 25 men. You can see the other numbers. 58 are Nevada residents, 12 are described as underrepresented in medicine by the AAMC, 25 are economically disadvantaged as measured by a validated AAMC socioeconomic index. 17 are first generations, four are veterans, and we have two rural students. So we are accepting a very diverse class of students with an attempt to have our classes mirror the population of our state. If I can have the next slide. I'm now moving into graduate medical education. That's our residencies and fellowships. Our adult endocrinology and pediatric emergency medicine programs graduated their first classes in June, with the majority of them staying within the state. Again, that's critically important to us. We were recently awarded $4.4 million from the governor's office to start the state's first fellowships in hematology and oncology, something desperately needed, and also rheumatology. 100 new trainees in graduate medical education recently started their clinical assignments. 40% are from our state, including recent graduates from our school. Again, our mission is to care for our community. We want people who are going to work and practice in our state. If I can have the next slide, this is a lot of text, but suffice it to say that our research funding continues to go up. We have a variety of research grants that have been funded, including a radiation exposure program that we're going to talk about later at this meeting. We have a family planning grant, some COVID grants, a first episode of psychosis grant, and many others. If I can have the next slide. We continue to grow our clinical trials. Again, that's going to benefit our community and our patients. We have 9 clinical trials that are active. We have almost as many that are in the process of being approved. And again, you saw our slide that we have asked for over almost $200 million worth of funding. If I can have the next slide, one of our important critical missions is diversity, equity, and inclusion. We hosted a pre-med conference to provide information and tips to ENSHE undergraduate students. We've partnered with the Office of Faculty Affairs to sponsor faculty to attend a national conference. We also had one of our senior faculty members attend the prestigious ELAM program, an executive leadership program in academic medicine. And finally, we've started last year an undergraduate pipeline program with incoming freshmen at UNLV, again, to maintain a diverse class. If I can have the next slide. Development, I showed you the slide early, but we had over $7.5 million raised. That was $4 million over our target goal. We're hiring people in the office, and we're actively now raising funds for our annual white coat ceremony. Next slide. So we put together, again, we're putting together an academic health initiative. We through the academic health initiative, have partnered with Clark County Schools for our first school-based clinic set to open in several weeks. We hope that that's one of many. We're recruiting physicians. And again, for the Academic Health Center, we obtained $4 million from the city for our new ambulatory clinical building. We also obtained $40 million from the state for a new research building. We obtained $30 million from the state for a lab and an additional $6 million from the city. So we're building out the facilities that we're going to need to provide the best state-of-the-art care for our community. If I can have the next slide. So UNLV Health is the business part of our operation. It's our practice plan. We're under our annual audit right now, but it looks like we'll at least break even, if not have a small profit. And that's after accruing money for some bonus payments and for a dean's tax for project planning. We estimate a total revenue of over $75 million, again, with a small net profit. We're looking for ways to enhance revenue and improve quality. One of the ways we're doing that is we've joined an accountable care organization called Silver State. The future of payment for healthcare is going to be value-based, that being that you will get enhanced payments if you provide an increased quality at a decreased cost. The Affordable Care Organizations are one way that we're going to do that. We know that that's the future. We know we need to get into that business, and that's why we've joined that Affordable Care Organization. We've also signed several pay-for-performance contracts with our providers. We've renegotiated nearly all of our third-party payer contracts, and we've renegotiated the physician service agreements with our principal partner, UMC. If I can have the next slide. In UNLV Health, we want that to be the place people want to work. We're undergoing market equity review for salaries. We had a cost of living raise. We've increased the number of paid holidays and some other things that you can read about. But in general, we've, over the past year, decreased turnover in the practice plan. We're working towards improving culture. And again, we want to be a place where people want to work. Mr. Chair, that concludes my presentation for this morning. I'm available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Dean Kahn. Do I have any questions or comments for Dean Kahn? Regent Moran.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate it. And I definitely don't want to slow anything down here today because I know everybody's on tight timeframes. Dean Kahn, thank you for your time this morning. I appreciate it and appreciate what you're doing. Being down here in the South and that area, so to speak, kind of being my old stomping grounds, I was essentially born and raised in a home on Pinto, which is literally two or three blocks away from the medical school. And that was an area of town where we had a rule in our house that we had to stay within the radius of us being able to hear my mother's whistle. And that was one of the areas that we could get far enough you know, from the home and still hear my
voice. I hope for your sake she had a loud whistle, Regent Moran.
The town was a lot smaller in the 70s and the 80s, but I will say that, that it, you know, to see what has happened in that area, it, we really kind of have to stop for a minute, take a pause, and even, you know, Vice Chair Tarkanian, who is a neighbor for many years, would probably say the same thing. It's just remarkable what has happened in that particular corridor, you know, from what the city of Las Vegas has done to kind of setting the foundation and then kind of moving forward with this medical district. And then, you know, driving down there the last couple of months on my way into work and seeing that building and its complement to the other buildings that are down there that have been down there for some time, some new, some old. You know, Rome wasn't built in a day, of course, but that building is just incredible. It's beautiful. I mean, from an aesthetic standpoint, it's top notch. And if you start looking at all of the other, you know, all the other medical schools throughout the country, I would put, in terms of aesthetics, I would put us at the very, very top of the list. And I think that's great. And you know, that is thanks to the folks like Lindy Schumacher, Maureen Schaefer, Chris Engelstadt, Diana Bennett, Mary Kay Cashman, and all of the folks that really had this vision and stepped up, not only, you know, with their blood, sweat, and tears, equity, but also with fiat, with money, and really putting it out there all the way to see a medical education be more available and more accessible here in Southern Nevada, but also to folks that come from all over the world now. But moving away from the aesthetic side of it, Dean Kahn, you know, just in terms of taking a look at the practice plan and taking a look at the allopathic, you know, medical education plan and the curriculum and how you have styled that strategically. So, and it's just incredible. I mean, I've polled faculty, I've polled administrative folk, and then obviously students that I've known for many years from first class all the way to where we are today. I also wanted to say, you know, I would put us number one, our schools, both UNR and UNLV. And I wanted to note the collaborative efforts between you and obviously your team and the folks up in the north, which, you know, it's, again, it's a sharing of information that allows us to kind of move the needle in medicine, but also allows us to keep our finger on the pulse of what we need to do to compete with other states that have medical schools close by and even further so geographically. So, but I wanted to compliment you. The other item I had on my list right here, Dean, and I, sorry to take so much time, is Dr. DeBrava's contribution to this particular endeavor from A to Z for, I would say, upwards of a decade of service and commitment. And so, again, I wanted to take my hat off. Dr. DeBrava and I, you know, we have seen eye to eye on many items. Of course, there are obviously items that we, you know, don't see eye to eye on, but that's part of living in a democratic society and working on a board as prestigious as this particular board is and should be. But I wanted to thank Dr. DeBrava for his contribution to this, because I will tell you, as I would see him as one of the founding fathers of this particular endeavor, from starting at, you know, meeting with folks over at UMC in conference rooms and moving forward with the doctors here locally, and you know, lots of ups and downs and all arounds, and here we are. But Dr. DeBrava, I wanted to say thank you to you for starting this, and then being able to drive by the building, listen to the dean in terms of numbers and what we're doing moving forward to provide an incredible best-in-class education and a location for career, not just for education, for career for our students. Again, thank you. And that's all I have for this morning on this particular item. But again, I wanted to cover those three items. Thanks, Dr. DeBravo.
Through the chair to Regent Moran, thank you for the kind words. It really does take many, many people. It's really been an honor and privilege to serve in this role for the past couple of years. It's really good to see things moving forward. And again, we're here to improve care for this community. And, you know, there's many, many people who have really helped and will continue to help with that process. So I thank you truly for those kind words.
Thank you both, gentlemen. Any other comments or questions?
Mr. Chair, Regent Perkins here.
Yes, Regent Perkins, please.
I just have a quick question. I know I'm not on this committee, but I just have a quick question about the residencies. Is there a plan or a path to increase those within our state?
Regent Perkins, through Chair DeBrava, it's a complicated process. Most residency programs are overseen by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, the federal government. The government, as part of the Recovery Act, did allow for expansion nationally of 1,000 residency spots. Now, that's not very many when you consider the size of our country, but we got our application in early. We should hear in the next couple weeks whether we're part of that expansion. Additionally, the governor's office has pilot grants that provide at least startup funds for residency training, and that's what led to our two new proposed fellowships in both hematology, medical oncology, and rheumatology. But, you know, Regent, we have a long way to go. We continue to talk to our elected officials. Our local elected officials understand how shorthanded we are, and this is going to be really a long-term fight, if you will, to get the support that we need.
Thank you, and good luck with that.
Thanks.
Thank you. And for the sake of time, I'm going to go ahead and move on. Thank you, Dean Kahn, for the presentation.
Thank you, Dr. DeBrava.
Oh, yeah. Vice Chair Tarkanian, please.
I just wanted to add that those are my stomping grounds now. And I want to just tell you how many people came from so many different services to help us. This will not only help us in the health way, it will help us economically. The amount of help it will give us economically is astounding. And I can't tell you, I'm so excited to see some of the things that we've done come to fruition. So thank you very much, and thank everybody who worked on it.
Thank you, Vice Chair Tarkanian. And thank you for your help when you were with the City Council and everything that you've done. And just for completeness, I want to share that I also was in that stomping ground. My family, we grew up on Hastings, just a few streets down. They wouldn't let us go down to Pinto. That was just too far for us to go. My mom couldn't yell. But anyway, let's move on to item 5, UNR School of Medicine Report. Dean Piasecki, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Melissa Piasecki, Acting Dean, University of Nevada, Reno School of Medicine. Thank you. And I have some updates and highlights. Next slide, please. This is a quick overview of what I'll be touching on today, some transition with our UNR Med Dean. Incoming class of 2026, we talk about expansion of our medical student research programs, updates on our PA program, updates on philanthropy. Describe a couple of cool things that are happening with outreach and events, update on a renowned affiliation, and a few words about an ongoing audit. Next, please. As you know, we are welcoming our next Dean and Chief Academic Officer to UNR Med and Renown Health. Dr. Paul Hoffman will be joining us in the middle of October. He has already completed a number of transitional meetings, and we look forward to seeing him soon. Next, please. In August, we welcomed our class of 2026. We were pleased that 93% of our students are Nevada residents, pretty much evenly split men and women. And in this class, we have the highest percentage of students coming from rural backgrounds since we started collecting this data. We're up to 26% of the class that has strong rural ties. Next, please. In our incoming class, we have other great diversity, including generational diversity, with a large percentage of our students being first generation. We have economic diversity, and we have demographic diversity, with students coming from a variety of backgrounds and representing groups underrepresented in medicine. Next, please. Our student research is expanding with the help of our clinical affiliates. This slide shows a photo from a research open house hosted by Renown. This was for students, faculty, not just in the School of Medicine, but School of Nursing, computer science, public health. And what it represents is the Renown affiliation opening up research opportunities campus-wide. Next, please. Our VA affiliation also is a great opportunity for us to grow medical student research. We applied for and received a competitive funding program for something called the Vision program at the VA. And this allows us to bring first and second year medical students into a structured summer research program, which we look forward to growing over the next few years. Next, please. Our PA program last summer graduated its third class of PA students and welcomed our fourth incoming class. This program has been doing exceptionally well, and we anticipate our final stage of the accreditation process to be completed in early 2023 with the final site visit for provisional accreditation. Next, please. Quick update on School of Medicine philanthropy. In 2021, we received generous gifts in the form of program enhancements, endowments, and scholarships totaling around $4 million. The program enhancements are directed towards community-based services such as the UCAN program, which is the University Center for Autism and Neurodevelopmental Disorders. Support some of our basic science research, such as some of the research for a type of familial muscular dystrophy. And the endowments support our white coat event. We are, of course, very grateful to the generous individuals and foundations that are supporting our school. Next, please. We received a special gift, perhaps not the largest gift, but very special because it was the result of the Renown's employee-directed charitable giving program. They selected the Sanford Center at UNR Med as the recipient of their annual senior services category, in which they support a community program that is providing services to seniors. Next, please. Last summer, we co-hosted a Northern Nevada Nursing Summit with the Orvis School of Nursing. This was inspired by a general and shared understanding that we have serious nursing workforce issues in Nevada, and was attended by nursing leadership at the hospital level, industry, and by our academic leaders in Northern Nevada. Next, please. And we are working on a white paper with all of the NC nursing leadership in which we will be developing some policy guidelines, some opportunities that we learned from the summit, that we've learned from leaders in this area nationally, that we will be distributing to our local, state, and federal policymakers. Next, please. I have a number of updates with regards to the Renown affiliation. For context, many of you have heard nationally, internationally, health systems are facing significant financial strains coming out of the COVID pandemic. Renown's not an exception, and I'm asked from time to time whether or not financial strains are impacting the affiliation. And I'm very pleased to say that the affiliation remains strong and that we continue to move forward on new initiatives supporting our clinical and academic missions. We have a number of funds flow with Renown that include support for faculty clinical effort, that include shared salary for integrated leadership positions, and all of those in the agreement remain intact and on time. With Renown, we are currently developing guidelines for joint philanthropy efforts, and we recently very successfully came together and submitted a joint grant for a foundation support. We are continuing our integrated chair searches. Very pleased that we've attracted two wonderful individuals to lead our departments of women's health, OB-GYN, and pediatrics. Candidates tell us that one of the attractive things about these positions is the affiliation and the affiliation agreement, because there's so much potential to develop within that framework. So we're pleased to have our academic chair of OB-GYN also be the leader of Renown Women's Health Services, and our academic chair of pediatrics also be the physician-in-chief for Renown Children's Hospital. We have ongoing searches in internal medicine, family medicine, and psychiatry, and we very recently opened a search for another shared leadership position with Renown, which is the senior associate dean for academic affairs at the School of Medicine and the associate chief academic officer at Renown Health. Next, please. An upcoming initiative within the affiliation is developing proposed amendments for the NCHE handbook regarding a unified academic faculty track, which will recognize the academic contributions from our clinical faculty at Renown and at the School of Medicine. We'll be working on that and bringing that to you in the next year. Next, please. I'll finish with a few words on an ongoing audit. Last July, we noted that there were issues with regards to our basic science departments. When we prepared this slide, this reflects the understanding we had in July. However, there's an ongoing audit, and as campus and NCHE auditors go through the process, we know we'll have a more complete understanding, which we'll be able to share with you in the future. Next, please. This slide represents our students doing a thank you event, which is an annual event for our donors and their families for our anatomical donation program. And I wanted to close by thanking the board. It's been an honor and a privilege to serve as the acting dean of the University of Nevada Reno School of Medicine, and I thank you for your support, and I invite your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Dean Piasecki. Any questions or comments for the dean?
Mr. Chair?
And I believe that's Regent Moran.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Dr. Piasecki, Dean Piasecki. I'm pronouncing that right. Is
perfectly
that right?
Right, yes, thank you.
Okay, good. I didn't want to butcher your name. They sometimes will butcher my name, and it ends up not being Moran. It ends up being a moron, which I never really liked, especially so when I was younger and in school. I wanted to also commend the job that you all are doing up north and obviously throughout the state and all over the world. But, you know, the partnerships, the strategic partnerships with Renown, unbelievable, incredible. Just again, great work on that. I think you might know, we have our family has a scholarship endowment and has had such for, I think, upwards of 20 years. My sister Addie went to UNR Med back in the, I think, the late 90s. And then she came down here for MS3 and MS4 and did her clinical rounds and whatnot down here in the South. And then she went on and did residency at UCLA, became chief of the residency program at Jewel Stein, and then ended up going to Mayo and is now, to give you a success story, is now essentially running anesthetics or anesthesia at the Mayo Clinic in Scottsdale, Arizona. And so you take, a young gal from the same place I came from here in Las Vegas when the population was, you know, in the hundreds of thousands of folk to now where we're coming up on, I think, two and a half million people, I think, in the South. And to see an individual who started Howard Wasden, and Vice Chair Tarkanian knows exactly where that school is, and I'm sure Dr. DeBrava does as well. But then all, you know, climbing the ladder, so to speak, and moving through the system, but looking back on where it all began in terms of her interest in medicine and her interest in serving the public through medical treatment and whatnot, and where she is today, it's just another example of how far a student can go if they pay attention, do good work, stay focused, and we continue to do our job, which is lay out the formula for success, and then, you know, integrate it, and then allow the students to kind of integrate it as well into their program moving forward. But again, my hat's off to you and what you're doing up there. Keep up the good work, and it's really great to see you know, both of our medical schools thriving, working together in sync, in tandem, and moving forward. And again, I would put us up against anyone, and it's very, very important, as the vice chair said as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Moran.
Mr. Chair, may I comment briefly?
Yes.
I would like to thank Regent Moran for that great success story. And I would like to just share with everyone the incredible pride that I have, and I think we all should have, for our Nevada students, because we have great students in Nevada at every level. And I think our medical schools are one way that we can tell these success stories. But Nevada students are great students, and when we graduate students and put them in residencies across the country, they tell us we have great students. So I think there's a lot to be proud of coming from the higher ed system in Nevada. Thank you.
Thank you, Dean. I'd like to go to Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair Grava, and I just want to thank you, Dr. Piyasaki, for your leadership over the last year. I have feelers out in the community, too, and hear nothing but praise about your leadership and how everything has gone this last year. It's not ever easy being an interim, or no, you'd be acting, I'm sorry. And it's a lot of work, not a lot of glory, but I just want to thank you on the behalf of myself and our community for your leadership. And also for your recruitment of so many rural students. That's such an important mission of the University of Nevada, Reno School of Medicine with our 15 rural counties. They deserve just as much medical facilities as our urban areas. So thank you so much for putting such an emphasis on that. And I know you're gonna do a great job transitioning our new dean, and we look forward to meeting him too. Thank you so much.
Thank you for those kind words. Really appreciate it.
And Dean, I would echo what both Regent Moran and Del Carlo said. Thank you very much for what you've done and will continue to do. What a valuable resource. Thank you again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I didn't know, Regent Brooks, was there any comment? Is he on the phone? If not, we're going to move to item six. Agreement, UNLV Health and Renown Radiation Exposure Screening and Education Program clinics. President Whitfield.
Thank you, Chair DeBrava. Keith Whitfield, President of UNLV, for the record. We request the approval for UNLV Health to contract with Renown Medical School Associates North to offer radiation exposure screening and an educational program clinics in Reno, Nevada. And to provide you more detail about this, Dean Kahn is still on the phone, and I believe also Alyssa Palmer is also on the line.
Live, go ahead. For the record, Elisa, E-L-I-S-S-A, last name Palmer, P-A-L-M-E-R, Chair of Family and Community Medicine, Kirk Aquarian School of Medicine at UNLV. Thank you to President Whitfield, and I can certainly address the contract that we're, the MOU that we're looking for you, Chair DeBrava. This is a collaboration that we have had with the UNR School of Medicine prior to COVID, and actually it has been in place since 2005 when Our department was part of the UNR School of Medicine, in which we had an agreement with the Department of Family Medicine in Reno to provide these screenings for individuals who had been exposed to radiation through the testing that was done in Nevada. It's a federal grant, and we have continued this since prior to 2005. We request this because of the agreement that was signed with the regents that should we need to do any clinical work in Washoe County, that the MOU would need to be brought before the Board of Regents. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Palmer. This is an action item that we're gonna ask for a motion in a moment. I think we wanna go to legal counsel, Tina Russom, if she had a clarification regarding the contract. Tina?
Good morning, Regents. Tina Russom, Deputy General Counsel. I would like to direct your attention to Clause 11 of the contract. That's located on page 5 of 7 of the contract itself. Specifically, that last sentence in the indemnification clause, it reads, UNLV's indemnity obligation for actions sounding in tort is limited in accordance with provisions of NRS 41.035 to NRS 41.039 to $100,000 per cause of action. That clause reflects an outdated statutory tort liability cap. That tort liability cap is now $200,000. Similar to other provisions in NRS, there are often sundown dates. That statutory cap changed from $150,000 to $200,000 effective July 1 of 2022. So while the provision in the contract is accurate in terms of citing to the appropriate legal citations, the Nevada Revised Statutes, it does not change our liability cap, which would be $200,000. Of course, this board has to comply with state law. That wasn't caught at the time that the contract was signed, and therefore we are clarifying that now. But it is my recommendation that by signing off on this agreement that the board would just be simply acknowledging that the tort cap liability is distinct from that which is expressly written into your contract. And I'm happy to answer any questions about that.
I have a quick question, Mr. Chair.
And that would be Regent Moran, I believe.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Tina, yeah, you're spot on. I saw that in the contract, noticed it, and I'm glad that we caught it. But in terms of your legal analysis of that, I mean, again, spot on, and appreciate the clarification on that. The other item I had real quick, since you're standing there, it seemed like to me that there is a situation here where this had to come to us because of the fact that there's a clause that's forbidding us in some way from, I guess, engaging in clinical or academic activity in Washoe, Carson, Douglas counties. Is that right? And can you explain to me what that's all about and how that works?
Madam Chair, Tina Russom, Deputy General Counsel, through you to Regent Moran. Thank you for asking that question, Regent Moran. Yes, that is accurate. When UNR entered into a partnership with the University of Reno School of Medicine, there is a clause in there that precludes the institutions from entering into contracts that would be providing medical services in these various counties. So you are absolutely correct. This contract needed to come before this board in order to make sure that we were in conformity with our prior agreements.
Okay, good. And again, Tina, thank you for making sure that we're covered on that stuff. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's all I have for now.
Thank you, Regent Moran. Could I entertain a motion, Regent Moran? Would you be willing to make a motion to approve this contract with
Mr. Chairman? May I?
Mr. Chairman? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Dale Urquiaga, Acting Chancellor. It's come to our attention that the document indicates that the memorandum is to be executed by the Chancellor, which is fine, but that means the motion needs to indicate that the committee recommends that the board delegate that authority to the Chancellor. Thank you.
Thank you, Chancellor, yes, for that clarification.
And Mr. Chairman, with that, I can go ahead and make a motion consistent with our Acting Chancellor's guidance relative to the language, and I would make a motion to approve based on those small edits in terms of giving the chancellor the ability to sign off along with the others that are listed on the agreement.
Thank you, Regent Moran. Do I have a second?
Second.
Regent McMichael has a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you. And just one last comment on that. It's a case-by-case basis, I think, when we'll see UNLV maybe doing some, due to grants or some special reason to do some practice in the Washoe County area and vice versa. I would think if UNR was going to do something, it would have to be a case-by-case basis and hopefully come to this board so we can just be aware of it and transparent. Thank you very much. We will go now to item 7, very important item here, student, faculty, and staff mental health issues and services. We have with us here in Las Vegas Dr. Jamie Davidson and Dr. Yanni Dickens. If you gentlemen could come forward and please go ahead and present. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Chair DeBrava and Health Science System Committee members. My colleague and I co-chair the ENCHI Mental Health Task Force. If we could go to the next slide, please. So as I know you all are aware, mental health is just an essential issue on college campuses across our nation. A survey of college presidents showed that 96% are concerned about student mental health and 94% are concerned about employee mental health. I think this is telling, given all the challenges presidents are dealing with right now in the challenging environment higher ed is in right now. Since I think the concern of presidents is justified, as health is now one of the top reasons that college students are considering dropping out of college. According to a recent survey by Gallup and the Lumina Foundation, more than 3/4 of college students are considering dropping out of college due to emotional stress and mental health concerns. That's a 34% increase since they asked the same question in 2020. In many ways, the pandemic has been a perfect storm, disrupting the normal developmental goals of young adults. Forming relationships was disturbed by social distancing and remote learning, sense of self by living at home and uncertainty, personal independence interrupted with their routines or living with family, career development was interrupted by job loss or shortages of internship opportunities. So given these developmental impacts, it's not surprising that the Center for Collegiate Mental Health found that 2 out of 3 U.S. college students reported that the pandemic negatively impacted their mental health. A University of Michigan survey in 2021 found that 41% of college students screened positive for depression and 34% screened positive for anxiety. That's the highest levels that this survey has ever collected since it began in 2007. Next slide, please. The work of the ENCHI Mental Health Task Force has been focusing on, one, doing a system-wide mental health survey. This will be completed, and it's dependent on the grant funding, which I believe is nearly secured now. Is to identify current mental health best practices, which we completed in 21, to do a health mental health services survey, which we completed in July of this year, and future recommendations for best mental health practices based on gap analysis. So this will be completed. This information, I think, will be vital to best serve the needs of our students and help them meet their academic goals. Next slide, please.
Thank you for that information, Jamie. Yes, and so I'm Dr. Dickens. I'm the director of our counseling center at the University of Nevada, Reno, and it's good to be back in Las Vegas. I actually did my clinical psychology PhD at UNLV. So having had experience in both college counseling centers, UNLV and UNR, as well as Utah State, where I did my internship, College student mental health is a passion of mine. So with that said, I'm going to talk about what we learned from asking at least one representative from each of the NCHE institutions about the status of students and faculty and staff mental health across institutions. Next slide, please. So UNR and UNLV are two institutions that have collected past and recent data on the mental health needs of our students. So I'll focus on student mental health, and I'll finish up with that and then turn it back over to Jamie, who will talk about faculty and staff mental health needs and resources across campuses. So when it comes to student mental health, our universities and institutions meet the mental health needs of students in different ways. UNR and UNLV are both the are two of the institutions that have data on our student mental health from the past and recently. TMCC collects data, but was unable to report it at this time. So I presume that they're in progress looking at the mental health needs of their students. So what have we found at UNR and UNLV when we ask our students about their own mental health? What we find, which you can see from the slides here, is that by doing two different surveys, UNR and UNLV typically find that our students struggle from higher rates of depression, anxiety, self-injury, suicidal thoughts, suicide attempts, and overall distress, with some differences with respect to eating disorders and substance abuse. Next slide, please. So basically, UNR and UNLV are two institutions that have data, and the other representatives from other institutions on our mental health task force in July 2022, so just recently, responded that they don't have data, and so they don't really know, they want to know what the needs are of their students on their campuses. So one of our recommendations we'll see later is that we, across institutions, regularly survey our students, faculty, and staff to find out what their mental health needs are. Since many institutions don't know what the needs of students are, we ask them a different question, and I want to clarify to make sure this slide makes sense. We ask one representative from each institution, what do you think professionally, in your observation, are the top mental health concerns of students on your campuses? So these are not prevalence rates. These are the percentage of representatives that, across institutions, that think each of these following problems are one of the top three concerns on their campuses. So 75% felt like one of the top three concerns was depression among students, 63% anxiety, 38% stress, and 25% relationship problems. This roughly mirrors the data that we've directly collected at UNR and UNLV about the top concerns of students. UNR, backtracking a little bit, by the way, UNR and UNLV have found that rates of depression, anxiety, eating disorders, and suicidality are significantly higher on our campuses than other institutions nationally speaking. So our students score higher in those problems than students nationally. Those differences have been found, at least at UNR, to be statistically significant. And that mirrors the fact that Nevada is ranked overall 51st in the nation in mental health, which is a metric that's been consistent over the last recent few years, and which is a combination between the high prevalence of mental health problems in Nevada and the lack of resources or capacity to meet demand for mental health resources. Next slide, please. So bottom line, we think that our students are in greater need of mental health services across our campuses. Whether we have that data directly in hand or whether we're making inferences about our professional observations. So how do we meet the demand for resources and mental health needs of our students across campuses? It depends on the campuses. So when we asked again one representative from each of the different institutions, how do they help students? Most of them have a student counseling center on site in some capacity. The trend was certainly towards the larger, more established institutions having counseling centers, and UNR and UNLV in particular, and a long history and probably more providers. Both UNR and UNLV have student health centers that also can, physicians can, and nurse practitioners can help meet mental health demands. Some institutions have academic department clinics that also occasionally serve students. All institutions meet needs by referring to outside providers, and this is important, as you'll see in a moment, because we'll talk about access to those resources. And then contracted community providers. Most institutions contract with providers in the community as well to serve their students directly. Next slide, please. Okay, so of the institutions that have student counseling centers, those that do can provide a variety of mental health services on campuses to students. There's a number of advantages to having an on-site provider dedicated specifically to student mental health. Those places that have this provide more outreach, prevention, and psychoeducation, more crisis intervention and emergency services. And so if a faculty or staff member identifies a student in distress or in crisis on a campus, they can walk them over to the counseling center to get them help. Institutions that don't have college counseling centers would have to get them to the community somehow, and we know this in medicine and mental health practice, that physicians who refer to mental health practitioners that are on-site have much higher success rates at referring. And when the mental health providers are off-site, it's much more difficult to connect them to services. We find this to be true in our own institutions as well with mental health. The counseling centers can provide, intakes, evaluations for counseling, individual counseling, psychotherapy. Most of those operate on a brief counseling model to maximize the amount of services we can get to our students. During and after the pandemic, we now do a lot of telemental health counseling. And of course, like other institutions, we still refer to outside providers. An additional advantage to having an on-site student counseling center is that those places that do tend to also have training programs. And it was interesting listening to the two medical schools present today about training future medical providers. This is an important mission in Nevada. If we're 51st in the nation in mental health, clearly we need more mental health providers. When we're already operating in an institution and we have incentive to deliver more services to our own students, a great cost-effective way to do that is to get trainees from our own graduate programs and train them to be future mental health providers. I was previously to being director, the training director for 10 years at my counseling center, and we had over 10 years about 101 different trainees come through our training program and finish successfully, and over 50% of them stayed in the state of Nevada. Even though many of the institutions do have counseling centers, we still struggle to meet the demands for mental health services, just as Jamie was discussing earlier, because of the increase in prevalence of mental health problems, which is occurring before the pandemic and has only increased during, and hopefully we're after the pandemic at this point in time. Next slide, please. Okay, so remember that 100% all of the institutions refer to community providers, so we wanted to ask one person from each of the institutions how accessible, affordable are the community options, and does student health insurance sufficiently, does the insurance that students have, if they have it, sufficiently cover mental health services for them? We set the criteria for consensus to 50% or higher of the different institutions, and most of them found, and now this isn't ADA accessibility or anything, this is just, does the representative at each institution think that mental health services in their community, that students are able to access them? And most agree that they are not, so that would be 5 out of 8. Most of them found them not to be affordable, all but one. And and most found that students did not have sufficient insurance. Another advantage to having an on-site counseling center is there's a deterrent if students have their, due to their age, if they're on their parents' health insurance plan, if they access mental health resources, they are worried that their parents will know that they're getting counseling, and they don't always want them to know that, basically. Next slide, please. Okay, so bottom line, to summarize, what we learned by asking institutions about the mental health needs of our students is that most institutions actually don't know, because they don't have data in hand about the rates of mental illness of their students. We know where we sit as a state, as I mentioned before, and UNR and UNLV have collected data, and TMCC is in progress. So all institutions did seem to want to have this information, which is, again, why we recommend a regular survey of the mental health needs of students across institutions. All institutions do refer to community providers. However, most find them to be not accessible and affordable, and students don't always have sufficient insurance to access those resources. And as we'll talk about later, you know, this is important. There is a retention value of seeking mental health resources. Students who can seek mental health resources seem to stay in college at higher rates and perform better academically as well, not to mention their mental health and well-being will be improved. Most institutions do have campus student counseling centers, and those that do can provide a broader range of mental health services. We can also grow training programs that help increase the mental health workforce in the state, which is a huge priority. Even though many institutions have counseling centers, we still struggle to meet the demand, which has increased so rapidly that we can't quite keep up. Those that don't have counseling centers on site have to rely more heavily on community providers, and students likely face greater barriers in accessing mental health care when they have to go to the community. The common refrain Jamie and I were talking about is that when our own friends and family members and students and faculty try to access mental health resources in Reno and Las Vegas, they encounter needing to leave a message, hearing on a voice message that isn't returned, by the way, by a provider, hearing I'm not accepting new patients, having to shop around for multiple providers, being on a long waiting list, and unfortunately, sometimes, you know, people with privilege can access these services, and people like our students who have less privilege have an awfully hard time accessing community mental health providers. And so with that, I'll turn things back over to Jamie, and when we're both done, we are happy to take questions.
Next slide, please. So when we look at the mental health challenges faced by our faculty and staff, again, this represents the opinions of a few members of our campuses. So what we really need is survey data that will give us a much better sense. But people are people, so it's not surprising that it mirrors what we see with our students, that campuses report that anxiety, depression, stress, work concerns are the primary mental health challenges that faculty and staff face. Next slide, please. So when we asked about faculty and staff community mental health resources, we asked the same question. Are resources accessible? Are they affordable? And asked about sufficient insurance. So it's somewhat of a mixed bag here. So some communities, it's easier to access these services. Others, you know, as Yanni alluded to, I have many faculty and staff at UNLV that will ask me for referrals and questions. And honestly, I have a family member, you know, that we were trying to have see a psychologist, and it was a six-month wait before they could be seen. And this is within the last couple months, just to let you know. And I know people, so I have resources. So it's just a very challenging environment right now. And again, I think it reflects that the resources in Nevada, you know, are insufficient to meet the demand and need, hence our 51st ranking for mental health care nationally. Next slide, please. So overall adequacy for students and faculty staff, I think you can see that members of the mental health task force believe in general that we need to do more to meet the needs of our faculty and staff. Many of our services are designed for students. So yes, there are supports, but there's relatively few of them compared to what our campus communities provide for our students. I believe most campuses have EAP programs, and EAP programs are great. But in general, at UNLV, I believe it's three sessions that are free. But for many problems that we face in life, three sessions is probably not enough, you know, to make sufficient progress. So I think we have to advocate to do more. And I think when we have the opportunity this year to conduct an in-depth survey, that we'll have a lot better knowledge base to ask, work from, and advocate specifically for the needs of faculty and staff on our campuses. Next slide, please. So, in summary, there's many needs that are out there. And one of my concerns is that the needs we don't know about, right? So some of our campuses have regularly assessed the mental health needs of students. Others are just getting to this point. I think once we have this data, we'll be able to be more strategic. One of the things that was wonderful about pulling together the NSHE Mental Health Task Force, it was actually the first time, to my knowledge, that we all got together, each institution, and talked about what we're doing, talked about how we can support each other, share with each other, you know, share the lessons learned that we face. So I see a lot of value in this task force and helping each other, right, as to face our challenges that we face on our unique communities. Also, many popular articles talk about the mental health crisis our students are facing, but in my opinion, the real crisis is campuses' struggle to meet those needs, right? It's predictable that students would have these needs. It's predictable that faculty and staff would have them. The crisis is difficulty of meeting the needs that we know are out there. So I think it'll be essential moving forward for the mental health task force to not only collect the specific data to better understand the needs on our college campuses, to see where we're similar, to see where we're different, to better understand the unique populations that we have on each campus, to better understand who's using our services and who's not accessing our services, but also to do a gap analysis, to really look and see what is it we need at each institution and how can we advocate for each other system-wide to do a better job of supporting the mental health and the emotional well-being of our students. So funding is always a challenge. It's been a relief to have the support of President Whitfield at UNLV to support my efforts to increase the staffing to meet the mental health needs. But much of my 28 years at UNLV has been spent, you know, advocating and fighting for every resource that I could get my hands on. I think it's important to realize that the data is really clear that counseling works, right? Mental health services are effective, and not only do they help our students meet their needs, but they also have a big impact on their academic success and retention. So there's every reason for our campuses to, you know, bolster what we're doing to better support the needs that are out there. I think it's telling that recently the U.S. Surgeon General urged college administrators to hire more counselors and stress the importance of collecting data. You know, so we want to start first, not put the horse between the cart before the cart, but really get the data, you know, and then make inferences and recommendations from an informed perspective, which we hope to develop. Next slide, please. Everything I said for students, I think, absolutely applies for our faculty and staff. I'm aware of efforts at various institutions to pay greater attention to the well-being of faculty and staff. I think one of the positives of the pandemic was, I think, we're more aware and sensitized to the impacts that this has as employees that really shape, you know, our students and support them. It's important that we're also meeting and supporting their needs that are out there. So I think there's good work that's there, and I think the continued work of the Mental Health Task Force will better help campuses, you know, continue that work and be more strategic in meeting faculty and staff needs in the future. So I think that summarizes what our presentations were. Thank you, and if there's any questions, we're happy to answer them.
Thank you, gentlemen, for the presentation. And I have to say thank you. I think Regent Geddes was the one that maybe requested this item to come before this committee. So it was extremely worthwhile for us to hear this. And I'm sure I'll ask for questions or comments from the committee or the other regions.
Mr. Chair.
Back to you, please.
Yes. I just wanted to point this out, and in the essence of time, I'll bring it up, and then if anyone is interested in more information, please just contact me. I feel like another piece that could be helpful on our campuses is something that's provided pretty much in every community by a couple, at least two or three different nonprofits, and it's mental health first aid. And that just teaches those of us who maybe are not working in that field to be able to identify and assist people in our circle of influence that may be suffering from a mental health for any reason. And I used to teach that here in Elko County for 17 years. So I know that it works on just a basic information with people that we know, and I would really encourage our institutions into looking at that, and I'd be happy to help you find the place in your community that can help you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair McAdoo. I do have on the list Regent Del Carlo, Moran, and Brooks, so we'll go Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair DeBrava, and thank you for this presentation. I don't think it shocked any of us. We read it in the papers, and studies I've been involved in point to mental health, and it's really sad when our state's 51st. And you've done a wonderful job of identifying all the problems. And I don't know if it'd be now, but new business, but I would really like to see your group come back with some solutions. What exactly do we need? I mean, we say we need more, but what's the data? How many more? How much more? What kind of money is this going to take? So that's what I'd like to see, because it's easy to identify a problem, but we need some solutions to this. And I do feel our students really have suffered, especially through this pandemic. So thank you for the information.
Thank you, Regent Del Carlo. Regent Moran.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Yanni and Jamie, I've got to tell you, I appreciate the presentation. I appreciate the work put into this, because this seems to be an area that is as important as any other, if not more, that we address in healthcare, in medical schools in general, but also all of our other institutions as well. I would like to, you know, echo the remarks made by my colleagues, Member Del Carlo, of course. But you know, it's nice to see that we are addressing the mental health crisis in medical schools, because it is big, and it can become overwhelming. And to see you guys and your teams kind of get out there and move the needle, so to speak, to ensure that the quality of life for both students, faculty, and any other correspondent person involved in the process is important. And it is alarming to see our ranking statewide. And so there definitely is an issue there, and I'm glad you all are putting your finger on that to test waters and to get in front of that. A question for you again on the task force, and I would imagine this is somewhat similar to like a Balint group or a Schwartz group. Is that sort of what you guys are doing with regards to mental health and this task force?
So yes, part of the goal of the task force was just to identify what the needs are across the system and look at the resources that each campus has to meet those needs. And then the next phase is to advocate and support each other that we're better able to meet the needs of our students, but also faculty and staff. Because many times when we're talking about mental health, we're generally focused on our students, which is appropriate, but faculty and staff are very important too.
No, I think, and slide 9 of 16 was really one that kind of caught me a little off guard in terms of the accessibility and the affordability of this, and how, you know, integrated this these issues are on our campuses. And I'm just glad that somebody has kind of taken charge with this and is moving forward to adjust this. The other, and to fill the gap, so to speak, I think that's what you had said, is sort of fill gaps in these areas that are very, very important. But it seems like early, you know, I didn't hear anything relative to like early intervention. And it seems like to me that early intervention is really one of the things that we really want to take a look at, because it seems like early intervention really will help dampen the situation, but also will assist the folk that are having these issues, but will also help us move forward, much more seamlessly on this particular item. And I was wondering what types of, it kind of goes to what Regent Del Carlo had said in terms of what are the solutions and what is the plan? And so how does early intervention kind of, how does that interact with your strategies moving forward in this task force?
Thank you for the question. If I can say, at our university, and UNLV is doing this too, mental health first aid is a good first step. So I'm glad that Regent McAdoo brought that up. We launched it actually last year at this time and are planning to expand it. Other institutions are talking about doing that as well. And there are other programs like that that are a little scaled down. Mental health first aid requires about 8 hours of training. UNLV has used Cognito, and we would like to do that at our campus, which is a different vendor that provides 20 to 40 minute independent webinar trainings about how to help struggling students, faculty, and staff with mental health issues and support them before the problems get worse. But the thing is, like, and then mental health first aid has you refer to services. Okay, well, where are the services? So are they on campus? Are they the community? If they're in the community, how does the person access services when they're having a conversation with a faculty member who is not a licensed mental health provider? And so, yes, I think it's an all of the above approach. I think we need more effective preventative efforts across all institutions, and then we need more follow-up service when people are, you know, struggling from significant anxiety, depression, eating disorder, suicidality, and other problems. I would say that, and the students say this too, on UNR's campus, we just opened up a new, very small satellite clinic with two offices that's going to provide 15-minute non-clinical consultations. It's called Let's Talk. So you can just talk to a mental health provider, and they can help you problem solve really briefly, and they can help you figure out, do you need more or is this good? And so for 15 minutes, we can see a lot of students that way. What we're already finding is crises are showing up there, and then we're ending up having to send them to our counseling center, and we're already strained for resources. So I think it's an all-of-the-above approach.
And thank you. And Mr. Chairman, I know this matter is only on for information today, but I want to applaud the efforts of both Yanni and Jamie, and keep up the good work, gentlemen, and appreciate it. And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Regent Moran. We're going to go to Regent Brooks, and then we're going to go to the Chancellor for some comments. Regent Brooks.
Thank you, Chair DeBrava. Thank you so much for the presentation. I'm very, very interested in everything that you offered. Since maybe around 2017, I've worked with the Nevada Coalition of Suicide Prevention as an instructor delivering curriculum from Living Works, which I'm sure you're very familiar with, regarding suicide ideology and prevention. I was wondering, of the students who are seeking mental health resources, do you have any data that would demonstrate how many of those students are in crisis?
So I can speak for UNLV that of students receiving services at our counseling center, at any given point, about 25% of them have some degree of suicidal ideation. So our crisis services on our campus are very active. We do have an early identification program for faculty, staff, and students, you know, that alert us to issues. But we have numerous slots every week. So and on our campus, at least at UNLV, you know, there's generally about 20 students we see each week. They'll come in a self-identified mental health crisis. And I'm sure it's somewhat similar at UNR. And part of it is our campus have the capacity, by and large, to address these concerns. So what we're trying to do is look at the best practices system-wide. Other institutions do not have quite as extensive of services. So we're hoping as a committee we can advocate so system-wide that we can really create a more robust system to support our students in crisis when they present themselves to make sure that their needs are met quickly and effectively. And it's been our experience at UNLV is that when we address those mental health needs, students fairly quickly are able to get back to focusing on their academics and resume their regular routines. We track them and we find that they graduate at very high levels, those that are thinking of dropping out due to those things. So we generally retain them 85% of the time. So the research says it works, and we know that our programs work. So again, I think it's just taking the best practices that we have at each institution and trying to make sure that every campus, you know, has the correct thing to respond to students in crisis.
Yes, and I would, I'll answer the question a little differently. I don't have in my mind right now what the rates are of students who seek our services that are in crisis, but what I do have is data over the years about our entire student body at UNR. And both in 2018 and 2022, we found that 15% of the student body that responded to a representative survey had suicidal ideation. So again, that's 15% of the student body having suicidal ideation. And it's been it's been increasing over the years. One of the things I'd say about the services that we provide is that, again, they do our services really, they're a good investment. There's lots of reason to believe that you can retain students at about 5 to 6% of students that seek counseling through counseling centers on campuses would have stay in school who would have dropped out. So think about one out of every 20 of our clients stay in school and they would have dropped out. And then a different metric that I showed indicated that if a counseling center serves 500 students, they are effective in keeping about 30 students in school who would have dropped out. So like last year, we provided services to 1,570 students. So we could infer from that that we might have kept 90 students in college. And if you look at an economic impact of that, it could be about $3 million in tuition saved basically over the years. So what we do works, and it helps students, but we're having a difficult time delivering services to as many students as needed. And they tell us this all the time. The students, how can I get into counseling? It's hard to get into counseling. We try to do our best with the limited resources that we have.
So both of those percentage points that you just offered, I would consider high, 25% and 15%. That's a lot to navigate. Are there cross references between campuses in terms of support?
So, you know, as our recent survey showed, what's offered on campuses varies a fair amount depending on the size of campus. So UNLV and UNR tend to have far more resources focused on meeting these needs, which makes sense. Other campuses have less. I think every campus has some way of helping students in crisis, you know, and what we're hoping to do through gathering more specific information on the mental health needs of each campus, then using that information combined with a gap analysis to better identify what each campus needs and try to support each other in finding the funding to meet those needs so that at least there's a floor, so to speak, at all NCHE institutions on ability to identify and meet the need students with a mental health crisis. So I think that's our vision, but that's a big challenge.
The gap analysis that you spoke about, how long do you think it would take to conduct that study?
So once we get the final information about the grant that NCHE applied for, that should fund the study. So I'm hoping that we can do the study in the fall of 22 across our campuses. And I think once we have that, get the data back, then we can look at the data as a group. So once we have the data back, I think it'll probably take us 2 months to review it, to parse it, to identify the gaps compared to NCHE institutions and compared to the national data. And I think once we have that, we'll be in a much better place to answer specific questions that regents and our campus constituents may have.
Is there an exploration of virtual options, telemed, and other resources that might be available that aren't brick and mortar and somebody being physically there?
So I think at UNLV and UNR, we have extensive telemental health programs that are going on currently and have had since the pandemic. You know, so at UNLV, telemental health remains very popular to this day. About 65% of students prefer to use telemental health. So we have a robust program that's up and running. So I think on other campuses, it's identifying the capacity to provide those locally, and if not, to contract, you know, with companies around the nation that provide that. One of the challenges with telemental health is licensing and the ability to provide services across state lines. At UNLV, we require all our psychologists to be SCIPAC certified, which allows us to work across state lines for members of SCIPAC, which is 39 states at this point. So I think that's a model that would bode well for the other campuses to serve our students who are online.
Thank you. I appreciate your time. Thank you, Chair DeBrava.
Thank you, Regent Brooks. Chancellor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Dale Urquiaga, Acting Chancellor. I realize we're past time, but there's some information I want to share with the committee. I appreciate the Regent's interest in this. As I said to you the other day, one of my tactics will be to signal to you issues that will be before you in the future. So there's probably three things coming as a result. I want to express my thanks to Drs. Davidson and Dickens. This task force was formed by the former chancellor. They will give me recommendations that I will bring to the committee and then the board for inclusion in this body's strategic plan. So that's the first thing you should expect. Knowing of this issue, and I wish to acknowledge President Whitfield and his consistent raising of this topic at the Council of Presidents, I have asked my cabinet to begin planning for what I would call from my previous life's wraparound supports, or we call student supports here, with a mental health emphasis. I believe in my heart we will be asked about this at the legislature. I think we should be asked about this at the legislature, and there may be opportunities for one-shot appropriations at that time. So my team will be working with the institutions and the two gentlemen before you there in Las Vegas to prepare those recommendations to, I think it was Regent Del Carlo's request of what can we do and what will it cost. And then the last thing is we are awaiting final word on a SAMHSA grant that would, in fact, fund a position at the system. I think it's a wellness officer is the title, and would fund the kind of system-wide at all institutions survey that the gentlemen have recommended to us through this task force. So more to come on that. But those, I think those three things are important for the record and on our signal. And I think there is a stigma about mental health in our country, and so I also try to be a pretty authentic person and lead by example. So I was nearly one of those statistics when I was a college freshman, and as an adult, I continue to be treated for generalized anxiety disorder. I suffer panic attacks. So this is not someone else's problem. This is my problem, and I suspect I'm not the only one in this system. From what the data says. So I appreciate the confidence and support of this body and the gentleman before you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chancellor, for your comments. We have two more people for comment. One is the graduate student body president from UNLV. I have Nicole Thomas, and then we'll end with a comment from Regent Del Carlo, and we have to move on. We've already gone over our 30 minutes. So, Nicole Thomas, please.
Hello, all. Thank you so much for giving me the time to speak today. This issue is very near and dear to my heart because I was actually one of that 25% of students in crisis. The only reason that I'm in graduate school today and the only reason why I've continued with my education is because of the counseling and psychological services that UNLV provided. One of the best counselors that I ever had was actually a graduate student. So I wanted to share that as a potential solution for you all, is that we have tons of social work students and counseling and psychological services students who are interested in helping others. It's a very low-cost option, and they also need internship credits. So being able to consider something like that, we have a wonderful clinic called The Practice, which is full of students who are training for their final clinical hours. And they have group therapy, they have counseling, they have family therapy, they have a ton of services that they offer. I really want to hopefully have this board consider looking into your students as well and looking to them for assistance in that peer mentorship and that peer counseling. I'm really happy that Chancellor Quiaga had shared that too, because that's something that I also struggle with. So I just really quickly wanted to thank you all for spending that time and considering this as a real issue, because it is, and it affects myself and thousands of students who I know. So thank you. It means a lot that this is becoming like a forefront issue.
Well said. Thank you very much. Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair DeBravo. I just want to thank our acting chancellor for bringing up his remarks. I think this is one of our greatest issues we have in ENCHI, and I'm so pleased that we're addressing it. I think the data is going to show us that we're going to have a great return on investment if we put the time and the money into it. We just got a new program at Nevada State College that's going to dovetail into all of this, and I was glad you used the word stigma, because nobody else in the presentation used the word stigma. I think that's one of the greatest problems, that we have such a stigma in our country, and it's education is what's going to help people. I've always believed that anybody that has a mental health issue, it's no different than if you're a diabetic, you need to take insulin, or you need to go to the doctor if you've got a heart condition. I mean, we deal with so much in our lives today, with the constant onslaught of 24-hour news, social media, and all these things. And I really hope that that we can really help our students, because that's what it's all about. This is no different than having our students that are food insecure, housing insecure, but this really needs to go to the top of the list, because if we can get this at the top of the list, I think everything else will help, will fall into place. But this is where it starts, is good, solid mental health. So thank you for the presentation. And thank you, Dale. Ariakwa.
Thank you, Regent Del Carlo. Gentlemen, again, thank you for the presentation. We expect to be hearing from you again to hopefully we make progress on these issues. We are going to go to item number 3 for just a moment. I know we're running over time, way over time. My apologies. Chair's report. I just wanted to say this is my last Health Science Committee meeting, and it's been a privilege and an honor to serve on this committee. I've served on 12 years with the committee and 6 years of volunteer work before I became a regent, so it's been quite a bit of time spent here. And it's been a pleasure to meet so many people across the state of Nevada, this collective of people that have come together to improve our health-related programs with ENCHI, and I've just been so honored to work with everyone, and it's just been a delight. I think with the launch of the UNLV Medical School and with the UNR Medical School and its collaboration with Renown, I think we are on a very good and positive trajectory for those two schools, and I'm delighted to see that and honored to have some role with that. But there's more work to be done, especially we have to remember our dental programs, nursing programs, allied health, mental health, of course, and public health. So I look forward to watch this committee do more work in the future. We will go to item 8, new business. Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you. And thank you, Chair DeBrava, for your service. I didn't realize you've been on the committee the whole 12 years, which makes sense being a doctor, but... under new business, when I was a brand new regent, either in 17 or 18, the students from UNLV came to the board and asked us, I was just astounded, they asked us to raise their tuition. They were willing to do that, to put money into counseling services. And so I would like an update on that where they're at with that. We've never had an update since we approved that tuition increase.
Thank you, Regent Del Carlo. Any other new business? Seeing none, we will go to public comment item 9. Is there any public comment in Reno?
There's none in Reno.
Thank you. Any public comment here in Las Vegas for health sciences? There is none. Any public comment in Elko?
There is no public comment in Elko.
Thank you very much. This concludes the health science meeting.